And welcome to Theology Simply Profound, a podcast of Reformed Forum. This is episode 224.
Wherefore at length he broke his mind to his wife and children, and thus he began to talk to them. O my dear wife, said he, and you, the children of my bowels, I, your dear friend, am in myself undone by reason of the burden that lieth hard upon me. Moreover, I am for certain informed that this, our city, will be burned with fire from heaven, in which fearful overthrow both myself, with thee, my wife, and you, my sweet babes, shall miserably come to ruin, except, and which yet I see not, some way of escape can be found, whereby we may be delivered. At this his relations were more amazed, not for that they believed that what he had said to them was true, but that they thought that some frenzied distemper had got into his head. Therefore, it drawing towards night, and they, hoping that sleep might settle his brains, with all haste they got him to bed. But the night was as troublesome to him as the day. Wherefore, instead of sleeping, he spent it in sighs and tears. So when the morning was come, they would know how he did, he told them, worse and worse. He also set to talking to them again, but they began to be hardened. They also thought to drive away his distemper by harsh and surely carriages to him. Wherefore, he began to retire himself to his chamber, to pray and pity them, and also to condole his own misery. He would also walk solitary in the fields, sometimes reading, sometimes praying, and thus, for some days, he spent his time. Looking back at Pilgrim's Progress, this is how Christian and his family interacted together as Christian struggled through the study of the Word of God. His burden became greater, and the more he talked to his wife and children about his agony, the more they were hardened. The more they just wished he would leave. And so he did. He had to forsake his family in the sake of the gospel. So what happened to his wife, Christiana? What happened to his children? We'll find out today on Theology Simply Profound.
Welcome back to another episode of Theology Simply Profound. I'm Bob Tarullo, pastor of Westminster Orthodox Presbyterian Church in Indian Head Park, Illinois. And with me, as always, is Rob McKenzie. Rob's an elder here at Westminster, and we are ready to go for another series.
Yes.
A longer series this
time. A longer series.
It's been a while since we've done one of those, yeah.
One that I've been really anxious to get into.
Yeah, you've been like revving up for it. And what is this new series?
We're going to look at the second book in the Pilgrim's Progress series, the sequel, which talks about Christiana and her four boys and a neighbor of theirs, Mercy, and as they are converted and go to on the journey to the Celestial City as well, just like Christian did.
So when we come into this, did Bunyan write this, like, did he have the first book, and then he was like, okay, let's go right into a second one? Yeah.
No, actually, it's 6 years.
Okay, there's 6 years after difference.
6 years difference, and there's a lot of contrast between the writing of the first one and the writing of the second one, which we'll get into today. Mm-hmm. But I think it's helpful when we understand. One of the things that we did in the Pilgrim's Progress series, the first one, that kind of prompted us to really dig in, was I wanted to take a look at that from a literary standpoint, because you see there's a lot of books out there that talk about the theology and John Bunyan himself and how this can help us in our Christian lives, and of course that's great, but there's also a literary structure to the book, and it's very important in literary history. In one respect, there's debate right now, and there probably always will be a debate, is if this actually wasn't the first English novel. Some people would say Don Quixote is the first English novel. It was written before, but Don Quixote is a very different style than Pilgrim's Progress. Of course, we look at Pilgrim's Progress and say, that's a novel. I mean, that, you know, that's very, but it actually is in that category. And so there was nothing like it when it came out, nothing at all, which is probably why he had a problem publishing it.
Well, that gets to a question, like how was it received? We didn't really deal with, we saw in our last one how it was received throughout history.
Right.
But in between the 6 years, during this period of time, how is it received? What's he thinking about with regard to the next audience or the audience for the next one, and so on and so forth?
Right. Well, I mean, again, it was when he went to publish it, nobody wanted to publish it. He'd already had some successful books. And so when he goes to publish it, the people he'd worked before said no. He tried some other people. They said no. John Owen is the one who really liked Bunyan, was actually put his head on the line.
Mm-hmm. His reputation.
Well, I mean, his head, because he was working for the king.
Oh.
And the king did not like Bunyan. And so he chastised Owen for actually going to hear him preach. And that's where Owens gives that very famous line that he would give up all of his learning if he could preach like that tinker. Mm-hmm. And, you know, but again, the king can say, off with your head. Mm-hmm. So now, Owen, though, it's interesting. He had that ability throughout his life to get away with just about anything. I mean, and so John Owen was kind of the Ferris Bueller of his day. You know, he could just get away with, because he was
a genius.
Well, I would say Christian that, genius. Hey, anybody that can get out of, you know, school nine times, that's a genius. But Owen, he was in the inner circle of Cromwell that deposed and beheaded a king. And so the guy's son, the king's son that comes back, now Owen is in his inner circle. How in the world do you do that? Owen, he just had a way with people. And so the book is published, and it's a number one bestseller. Everybody loves it, or most people love it.
Some criticism that comes.
Well, there is some criticism. Yeah, there is. But when I say everybody, I mean like the general public. Because that's what you have literary critics that are, you know, all the time that will come out and say this book is horrible, but it's sold 80 million copies because everybody enjoys reading it. Mm-hmm. And yet the literary critic is saying it's so horrible. Same thing happened actually with Tolkien. He had some really bad reviews for The Hobbit and then Lord of the Rings. And I think the public had proved them wrong.
Yes.
But Bunyan and his, if you read the introduction to the second book,
And by that you mean the author's way of sending forth his second part of the Pilgrim and Apology.
Yes,
right? The author's apology.
Yes, the author's apology, where he talks to the book.
Introduction.
Where he talks to the book and he says, go little book, and find your way to those who have read the other one. Basically, so we're jumping ahead here.
Okay.
You're asking me too many questions at once.
All right. Well, just talk then.
Stop asking more questions. Let me finish. So the book is, he says in the apology, that lots of people love his book, and people, he keeps hearing about how great it's been to them. And people come up to him. They're like, oh, I love this part. And I love this part. And he says, people who, or old love it, people who are young love it, and everybody in between, and people who can't even read have heard the stories and they love it and they can't even read. He says you can find the book all over Europe. He mentioned Scotland very specifically because, see, especially at that time, Scotland was seen as this like end of the world kind of barbarian land. And so he specifically mentions it's even in Scotland. And in fact, at the very top of Scotland, if you look way up at the top, the town there is called World's End or Land's End, Land's End. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, there's this idea his book even has gone out to the boonies, and he mentions America as New England, that even in the colonies in New England, of course, it's 100 years before the Revolution.
Right, right. Well, let me just give this part here. And I am interrupting. I apologize.
No, that's okay.
By any kingdom, were they rich or poor, in France and Flanders, where men kill each other, my pilgrim is esteemed a friend, a brother. In Holland, too, 'tis said, as I am told, my pilgrim is with some worth more than gold. Highlanders and wild Irish can agree, my pilgrim should familiar with them be. 'Tis in New England under such advance, receives there no much loving countenance, as to be trimmed, new clothed, and decked with gems, that it may show its features and its limbs, yet more so comely doth my pilgrim walk, that of him thousands daily sing and talk. Right. So there's his description, and
the Wild Irish, the
Highlanders are the Scottish there, right?
Yeah.
So all over Europe, all over the British Isles, and even into this new world called New England.
So his book is obviously it's very popular. He's written. Remember, Bunyan wrote a lot of books, but of course this is his most popular. So he's enjoying it. You can see somebody in this introduction, especially. First of all, his poetry has gotten better. it has. It just I write poetry, and my poetry is not that great. It's okay. I'm with him. You know, his poetry is okay, but it's better in the second book. If you remember, you know, he writes the first book, and I think, by the way, I think it's very important to look at these as two separate books. They are two separate books. The second one is a sequel. Mm-hmm. We look at this, we talk about like Pilgrim's Progress Part 1, Pilgrim's Progress Part 2, as if it was written together, and it wasn't.
Right. So the first book, you said he's writing to himself. Well,
right.
So let's remind ourselves why. Yeah. Where is he?
Well, he's in prison.
Right. Okay.
And he's writing this.
And he's not
for
in the
himself.
Part.
No.
Okay.
He's not right. He's not in the second part. He writes the first book. He writes over 12 years during the bulk of it during the first prison term, which was 12 years. Mm-hmm. But he actually is imprisoned again shortly after he's released for another 6-7 months. And that's actually where he finishes it, the first part. But he's writing it for himself, so it's very autobiographical. You can tell he's talking to himself at times. When he's talking about the enchanted ground, where he is gonna, you know, try and he's telling himself, "Stay awake, mm-hmm. don't fall asleep, don't lose that devotion to Christ, that pushing forth in the Christian faith, don't become complacent." And it's he's really talking to himself. Anybody that's writing, he's a writer. So any writer, whenever is in some sense going to probably have some idea of, boy, if I were to publish this in his head, but he that wasn't his purpose for why he wrote it. And even after he got out, he had finished it. And then he starts showing it to some of his friends. Like, what do you think of this? And half the people said, publish it. Mm-hmm. And half the people said, don't publish it. And so it wasn't even I've got this manuscript. I'm going to go. The fact that he weighed the advice of a lot of people before he even published it shows you that it wasn't written intentionally to be published.
Well, why does that make a difference? So we have this bit that was written while he was in prison, intended audience, unknown except for himself at the time. Mm-hmm. But it gets published. What does that matter?
Well, it just matters as far as how we understand a story and how it's being written. Mm-hmm. When we read book one, he's writing to himself in a very hard time, very hard circumstance, being very autobiographical. We learn from knowing that it's very autobiographical. We know we can learn certain things. Knowing in the second book that he's writing for an audience, he says it in the apology, "I'm writing this for all those who have read and loved the first book," mm-hmm. and he's writing as a pastor to parishioners.
So it's the intentionality is different in what he's doing here now with the second part.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And that changes it somehow?
Well, it changes our understanding of what he's trying to say, mm-hmm. why he's trying to say it. When he, like I said, on the Enchanted Ground or in other places in Pilgrim's Progress, book one, he's really talking to himself. When he's in the dungeon, mm-hmm. He was in a dungeon. He was, the door was locked and, he could very easily have gone through times of depression. Just 12 years is a long time. And now in this one, when Christiana, is going through the Wicked Gate and Mercy is, again, we'll talk about this in the coming weeks, but Mercy is on the other side and, or they're attacked and, the vice that's given to them. When they ask, "Well, why were we? How come we weren't protected? Why were we attacked?" Mm-hmm. And the advice that's given, or the pastoral counsel that's given, we can understand that this is pastoral counsel being given to people who are asking, "Why does the Lord allow bad things to happen to us?" Mm-hmm. Well, because God wants you to be on your knees praying to God for the things that you desire and protection. Mm-hmm. And a journey would be one of those. And we learn from that. And so again, that's just a different emphasis.
Well, I mean, I guess the end, not the end question, maybe the beginning question is, well, come on, why? I mean, you have a good, successful book. It's one book. It's about, you know, this pilgrim, and his name is Christian, and we get the storyline, and, you know, some people go to heaven, some people go to hell, and that breaks up families, and why not leave Christiana in the destruction? Why have part two?
Don't do a second book because your first book was so good.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think actually authors that have very successful first books, I think that's something they ask him. Now, this wasn't, of course, his only book.
Right, it wasn't his first
book.
So
he has other books.
Yeah.
Well, there's several reasons. Some of it was to answer his critics. He did have some critics that were saying that this book was a romantic book.
Yeah. Romance.
Romance. That this book was romance.
Okay, now hold on a second. Yeah. So we have an idea of what a romance book is. Right. Like you have Harlequin novels. Yes. So I'm guessing it's not that.
No.
Okay, so... No. When you say that, or when
because
he uses
comedy.
That language in here of romance, in the apology under one of the answers to the objections, which we need to get to, like what he's answering eventually. Like
right.
I'm looking at this objection. What are you talking about? So, but why the language of romance? What does that mean?
So when we think of medieval romance, think chivalry, think an adventure with high ideals where good wins over evil. King Arthur and his knights. Think Robin Hood. Think Beowulf, Sir Gawain the Green Knight. This is actually is a style that was influenced and kind of harkens back to Greece and Rome. Mm-hmm. Epics.
So we're thinking fables and myths and things that aren't true? Is that what we're thinking?
That can be part of, because even Pilgrim's Progress itself, while it kind of harkens back to medieval romance, it had a lot of different, there was nothing like Pilgrim's Progress that had ever been out. So the people who were criticizing him for writing a romance were being pejorative. They were saying that this is nothing but medieval romance. And of course that's out of fashion because that had been kind of the dominant style of writing for 1,000 years, 1500 years. I mean, if it goes back to Greece and Rome, but it ended up, kind of going out of favor with Don Quixote. Don Quixote actually looks at medieval romance, which kind of what you're saying, where the idea of reality in and of itself is taken to kind of a fanciful level. You know, Sir Gawain, the Green Knight, you have this, the Green Knight comes into the room and Champ makes a big challenge. He comes into this big party and makes a challenge. And then he pulls his head off and walks out the door. But you're learning things. So this is a romance, or it is a high chivalry. It is, good versus evil. It is morals. It's the moral quest and things like that. But Pilgrim's Progress doesn't
fit in there.
It doesn't. Although with Pilgrim's Progress, you do have dragons and satyrs and giants, and I mean, there are a lot of mythical creatures within Pilgrim's Progress.
They're there, but they're based on another reality. And that is sort of, there's biblical allusion to some of those things, right?
There is biblical allusion, although some of the creatures that are in there, even like the hobgoblins and their satyrs are talked about. Those aren't really, those are more on the periphery of a biblical understanding that you have Satan and his little minions.
Yeah.
And so minions can, these demons are often referred to as like hobgoblins and things like that. But satyrs and that with the half horse, half man idea, that's just straight out of mythology.
Right. And sorry, unfortunately you said minions. And so all of a sudden these little, yellow creatures.
Yes.
With...
Not those minions.
No. Bye. That's, like that. Sorry.
So this is, but again, when Don Quixote comes out and it's kind of contrasting the romantic style with reality. So it ends up poking fun at that kind of style, and a new realism is born. And so when it comes up to Pilgrim's Progress and these people that don't like it are saying that's nothing but medieval romance, to poke fun at it or to criticize it, really. And of course, Bunyan's coming out and he's like, look, this is more than medieval romance.
Yeah. So with that in mind, he writes the book, he wants to to convey certain things and bring us back to Christiana, the four boys, and a new character, Mercy, and a variety of new characters, which we'll learn more about. Right. Well, he has a criticism of romance and such, but were there other reasons why he wanted to do this?
Yeah, I think now as an author, he probably got a lot of questions about Christiana and the family. Mm-hmm. I read that section to open because right. love a book and you love the characters in it. I do think that kind of is a natural question that would come up. What about his wife and kids? What about them?
We don't want it to be an old Lost, right? Where it's a bunch of unanswered questions at the last.
Right. But I think it shows you how greatly people love the story and the characters.
Yeah.
And which is something we talked about in the Pilgrim's Progress series, where Bunyan kept saying, don't look at this book and care about the story. This is not about the story. Just look at the teachings that I'm giving you. And yet, he had great character development, mm-hmm. even in characters that were there really quick. He was really good at writing characters, and the story itself is really good. But what happens is people start writing sequels that who are not him.
Do they write them in his name?
I don't know, actually.
Okay, I was just curious.
I think I know that that does happen. There is a book that completes the trilogy. There's a third one.
Oh, really?
That's a pseudo. Uh-huh. That says it's John Bunyan.
Okay.
But it's a pseudo.
Is it from that era?
No, it's actually about 100 years later or something. Right. I think, I can't remember the actual name. So, I thought it was later.
Are any of these still in existence? These pseudo, I mean.
I know that the third one,
the time, the one that he, like, imaged.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Okay. In fact, there's one especially that was actually pretty successful, and it was written by T.S. Sherman. Mm-hmm. Now, the thing about T.S. Sherman, that name at that time was very popular for people to use to write as a pseudonym.
Oh, okay.
So you have all these T.S. Shermans that are not the same person that are writing all sorts of different things. So who the knows? Real one was, it's really hard to find out. Now, this guy, Derek Thomas was talking about this in his great video series on this
from Ligonier Ministries,
where they think they know exactly who he is. But I read something else that talked about how they really aren't sure. But so it doesn't really matter. Somebody else wrote this, and whoever wrote this had an agenda, and the agenda was that not a Calvinist and not happy about being about Calvinism, and so wrote this book to kind of put out a more Arminian kind of book. And it's really interesting. And I get this from Derek Thomas. I'd like to find out more about this. I tried to do some other research to verify what he was saying. I trust him, so I'm sure. I don't know because I haven't seen the book. Mm-hmm. But T.S. Sherman's book has Christiana and the Four Boys. Hmm. And so now that's written 4 years after Pilgrim's Progress, and the sequel here is written 6 years, which makes me think that once that book came out and actually became popular, I think that's when Bunyan said, okay, I've got to do this.
Straight. I need to do something here to correct the storyline.
Yeah. And I think it shows you how much the influence of that book, mm-hmm. as well as probably the questions that he kept getting about Christiana and the boys, made him actually use them as his main characters. Mm-hmm. I think there's other reasons why he uses them, or he was able to build on those characters trajectory that was really good, and I think he wanted to do, but I don't think he even really had a choice. I think he had to write about Christiana and the boys, mm-hmm. because people kept asking him about it, and because of this other book that was out there.
Are there other popular, you mentioned the one T.S. Sherman, which is probably a pseudonym, but are there other popular stories that come from the same world that have been well known over the years? Like, I mean, I know of Celestial Railroad, which is not so much the same world, but it's a modernized version of that world, at least as far as Nathaniel Hawthorne's day was.
Right.
Not modern.
No, okay. Not that I'm aware of. Not yet.
Yeah, you're right. You have one that,
I have one
that you want.
Right. I do have a book that award one will be out next month. Mm-hmm. We'll see. And I do use this world. Mm-hmm. I have my character. His name is Seeker. He's leaving the City of Destruction. He's following Christian. He's trying to find Christian and Faithful. Trying to find them. And it's his journey on the road. The book is kind of dealing with don't all roads lead to the celestial city? Aren't all religions just a creation of God given to different people with different religions, but in the end, all will be saved? That's what I'm dealing with. Mm-hmm. But I use that world. Of course, in the sequel, of course, it's the same world, and Christiana does meet some of the same characters. She goes to some of the same places. There's new people that are in there as well. But it is, I mean, that is what you're saying, where Bunyan created this world, and he uses that same world in his sequel. Because again, this is not this. Lord of the Rings was written as one book. Mm-hmm. We noticed three, but it was written as one, and very wisely. Their Tolkien's publisher said, we're going to break this into three books. And Tolkien didn't want to do it. Mm-hmm. He was not happy, but that was absolutely the right call.
Right.
And one of the reasons why Tolkien didn't like it is because he wrote it as one book. And so where there's the cut after the Merry and Pippin are taken by the orcs and Frodo goes off on his own with Sam to Mordor, that's kind of where they're cutting it. And Tolkien just
Fellowship and Two Towers,
right? Yeah. And it just drove him nuts because he wrote it as one. Mm-hmm. Bunyan here, he wrote the first book. 6 years later, he comes out with the second. Yeah. So again, it's a very different, it's a very separate mm-hmm. book.
Yeah, although he does call it Part Two,
he does
right. So that's the language he uses. So I mean, it is separate. Right. 6 years later. But the language he uses is Part Two, which kind of brings it together. And you get most publications putting them together as one, which is why we tend not to distinguish them.
Well, his original title was Pilgrim's Progress, The Christian Strikes Back. But, you know, I think his second choice.
I don't think that's accurate. But he does set, excuse me, he does set forth in his apology what his purpose is.
Okay. Yes.
Right.
He has a mission statement.
Okay, what is the mission statement, and can you like expand on it?
Yes, he says, and I quote, "Besides what my first pilgrim left concealed, thou, my brave second pilgrim, has revealed."
I'm sorry, but that sounds a lot like New Testament revealing that which is hidden in the Old Testament.
Yeah, Greg Beale did the foreword for the second part of Pilgrim Progress. He's had... Another criticism, we were talking about criticisms and why he was writing. There were people who were saying, and he talks about this in the apology for the first book, he talks about this, that people were saying, this is too dark, that your story is way too dark. And he actually says in the first apology that sometimes we understand and learn better by being taken to dark places, because in dark places, light shines brighter. Mm-hmm. So he's like, I know there are times it's dark, but that can help us understand the things of God. Mm-hmm. So there was a certain kind of criticism as far as what was contained within the first one. And it's what the first one, of course, has his story. So it is someone on the journey, on their Christian life, and very specific to him. The second one, he says, again, going back to his mission statement, he says, what I didn't talk about in the first book, I'm going to talk about in the second book. That's really what he's saying. Mm-hmm. And so he's showing a very different Christian life in the second book. Mm-hmm. So just, and when you read it, I mean, not that there aren't trials and struggles, not that there aren't times that Christiana will struggle, mm-hmm. But it is a much more upbeat.
Well,
Christian life,
and which goes to the, realize that there are different ways in which people walk the life, and different things happen to different people, and that she's going through it not by herself, the way that Christian, for the most part, does. He has a couple of compatriots that go along with him, other pilgrims at different places, but she's got her four boys, and I don't know the story well enough. Does Mercy stay with them through the whole journey? Okay, so she's got a friend and her four children who are with her through the whole story. So it's a different life.
Right. I'm trying to avoid spoilers, by the way.
Said yourself that there are spoilers in the apology.
There are. Yeah.
And what kind of spoilers are given?
Then there'll be spoilers.
Well,
that's the whole point.
It.
We're trying. I didn't read that part. Well, you know, it just learned it. It does talk about how they'll see. I'm trying not to give stuff away. Okay, but it talks about not, it, what it says that they're not. Going to fight with devils. They're going to trot on serpents. They're going to overcome evils. They're going to be in rough winds, swelling tides, and they're going to something's going to happen to a certain castle.
Okay. Well, see, that's not. I mean, that's well, getting foreshadow.
that's foreshadowing. Not, yeah, that's me foreshadowing. Yes. But he says exactly what happens in the apology.
Well, yeah, but hey, he's giving it away,
right?
You know, wants to do that, and I'm opening up and looking at the apology in my Harvard Classic edition here, and
in your very, very beatnik kind of turtleneck.
So Rob's just making fun of me all morning here. He does not like my clothing, and you know, I feel downtrodden. I feel oppressed.
You look like a carrot.
To all people who have red hair, and I don't, Rob is making fun of you right now. Yes, he is.
To all people with carrot colored shirts, I am making fun of you.
All right. So, I mean, this gets to us another point. Why is he having an apology, a defense of writing this? First of all, that comes about in the form of objections stated and then objections answered. It's objection one, objection two, objection three, and objection four.
Right. Well, first of all, this is when you wrote a book, you kind of did an apology. That's just how you did it. It's like a forward today.
I mean, sure. Okay.
It wasn't unusual. As far as the defenses, there's far more defenses in his first book, The First Pilgrim's Progress. Bunyan's opinion was if you read my book and don't like it, okay, that's fine. Try not to be slanderously critical. And if you have heard about my book and you don't want to read it, don't. I mean, I'm not saying he was a sensitive person, but there does seem to be a bit of getting overwhelmed with people who were giving him criticism, even though, as he says, you know, all these people love it and it's all over the world and it's been translated into languages and look, even the Scottish people are reading it.
And even those Scots.
Yeah, well, I can say that because I'm Scottish. So but he does have this, he keeps coming back to these people who want to be critical of the book, and they're critical. Why? Because it's dark. Because it reminds them of medieval romance. Mm-hmm. Well, that has nothing to do with the story. I get that, and I appreciate that he's saying, look, stop worrying about my style, or that there's a certain scene that you might not like. If you want to be critical, be critical about the theology. Now, he's going to fight them about that, but he says you're missing the point. If you're going to be critical because the story is not to your liking, then you miss the point of the book. And I think that's why there's these criticisms in there, or these defenses of criticisms within the book.
Okay. All right. So this particular episode is introducing ourselves to the second part or the book two of The Pilgrim's Progress, Christiana's journey. We've mentioned a few of the characters. We've mentioned the apology that he starts with and the objections to. But as we're getting into it, next time we're going to delve right into the book itself. Who are we going to be introduced to? Who are these characters? Who should we really know about? What's the benefit here?
Well, the main characters are Christiana, who is Christian's wife. Who, as we read and did the opening, her and then the four sons. But in the opening, he is imploring them to understand that there's this calamity coming, and it's interesting because he's not necessarily witnessing to them in the first part, because he's saying, I don't know how we're going to escape this. What he's telling them is that, you know, we're sinners. And there's judgment coming for our sin, but I have no idea how to get away from it. He's under the burden from reading the book. And, of course, this is, then evangelists will come to him. So this is the, pre-evangelist in the mm-hmm. opening of the first part. But Christiana and the four boys are like, he's nuts. He has a fever. He's gone crazy. And so, of course, he goes off, and Christiana, as we'll get into, we'll find out that, you know, she realizes, that the Christian's gone. He's not coming back. And, it's interesting because she is a widow. Going through the story, of course, in the first book, Bunyan himself is Christian. I mean, that's very autobiographical. So you have a man going through the way of Christianity on this road. Now you have a woman going on the same road, but also a mother, and a widow. You have the four boys who I believe kind of start out as younger boys at the beginning. Mm-hmm. By the end, they've grown.
They grow up.
Okay. And, so now you have children and you have orphans, because you have a widow and orphans, which is interesting because this is the people that are supposed to be taken care of by the church. And, Derek Thomas actually does a really good, talking about this when he's talking about how when Bunyan was in prison, the church at Bedford, it was the women, it was filled mostly with women and children. And so, they kind of kept the church going while he was in jail. Men were not as common they were there, but it was mostly women and children. And so the fact that his story is featuring women and children, I think, is a great way for him to, minister to these faithful women and faithful children. Of course, now there are many of them are grown up. The sixth person mm-hmm. is Mercy, who's a neighbor of Christiana. Now, she's talked about as a young girl. I think the description kind of sounds like 15 or so. So a young teen, maybe a little bit older. The way that Bunyan describes her is a tripping maiden.
Okay.
Which we understand tripping as like falling over, which at this time it was actually used more for, like I kind of think Heidi dancing on the hill for looking for her grandfather.
Okay.
But no, it really is that more, free kind of the innocence of youth. Now it does lend itself to the idea of tripping, mm-hmm. you know, but it's that it's more of a carefree, dance of a young girl. And so that's how he's trying to pin her as being very young. And we see her throughout the book as exemplifying traits that might be a little more susceptible to somebody who is not immature like a child, but still immature. Mm-hmm. And Christiana, of course, who is a widow and a mother, and even though Mercy is not her daughter, you can see her being motherly to Mercy. She's definitely has more maturity. She has more life experience. She is going to be the one that is the leader of the group as they travel. Mm-hmm. Now, the other thing, of course, Bunyan remarries before he goes to prison the first time, and his children, his first wife had died, and his second wife raises the children while he's in prison. So she is a very courageous, mature woman. And I think probably he has her in mind when he's writing Christiana, mm-hmm. as how she's taking care of children on her own. She's, you know, not boys and girls, with throwing Mercy. And, so I think that it would only be natural for him to be using her as kind of his heroine mm-hmm. throughout the story.
All right, well, that's another episode of Theology Simply Profound. You can find us at reformforum.org, as always. And there, of course, you have all the wonderful resources of Reformed Forum. And if you have any comments, questions that you'd like to ask us, you can always find us at mail@reformforum.org. Or you can go to westminsteropc.org to find out more about the congregation that Rob and I serve, or for other congregations of the OPC in Chicagoland, Chicagoreformed.org. Rob, I think we all have an idea of what's going on next, but why don't you inform us? What's happening next?
Yes,
time?
We will get into the first part of the book.
I'm just being specific here. Are we doing like a whole chapter? Are we doing a portion?
We'll see how far
we
get.
Thanks for taking the time to be with us on another episode of Theology Simply Profound. Until next time.